I should know some of this stuff so that that way I can, like, have intelligent cocktail party conversation with some people. Plus, like, I mean, like, a hot smart
chick. This is a memory of Blaine, because he's not here. I have to make annoying noises while you talk.
A hot smart chick is just, like, you know, way more appealing. So, there's that whole thing.
It's intimidating, though.
Oh, it's fantastic, though. It's intimidating. Aren't you excited by that? I guess you're not anymore, but...
Well, no, because the thing is this. Like, a hot smart chick thing is, like... If they're too smart, that's almost more like... I mean, the thing with any girl is... Until you've been with her long enough, is always the fear that they're going to leave you for something better because that's what they do.
And this will relate to David Mamet. Welcome to the Feudal Podcast. We're doing David Mamet's Heist tonight. And the David Mamet. Written and directed by David Mamet, who I guess made it big as a playwright. I always remember that in my history book, my history text in AP US History years ago, his name is mentioned at the very end of, you know, like when it gets to like modern times, you know?
As a
modern artist kind of thing, and
so you know the author of that history book was into him.
Yes, but the thing is, like, I remember reading that, and then like years later, I think when Spanish Prisoner came out, I was like, okay, I guess this guy's like a big deal. I mean, now he's directing stuff, so I should see what it looks like. You know, he directed stuff I think before that, but
Spanish Prisoner was weird. That was the first like directorial thing that he did that I saw. And I didn't like it the first time I saw it because it was nothing like I'd ever seen. And the next time I watched it, like 3 years down the road, I was like, "This is brilliant! It's really good. Like, it's just so smart, you know."
Yeah, I think I don't know. I was having that debate about, is this just really pretentious or is this good?
Right.
And I'm like, I like it. I'm interested. It's an interesting kind of followable story.
Big Daddy is taking care of people right now.
Big Daddy.
Hell Up in Harlem, the movie I talked about, is finally on again. I've been waiting. So, the Mamet thing, let's say off the top of your head, we just watched Heist, but
yes.
before we watched it right now, how would you kind of rated them, just having remembered them in the past? Because a lot of times, like, Mamet is something, when people get into film, there's usually a point where you go through, you know, we've talked about this before, you go through stages of watching a certain director or writer or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think anyone who's really into film has gone through a Mamet stage where you kind of watch them, maybe not in a one big chunk, but you do pay attention to them when they come out, and then you kind of leave them be for a while.
Yeah, so, and that's where you've been.
So at this point, where would you rank them leading up to tonight?
I may have to just, I mean, you know, I'm not going to...
Just off the top of your head, don't give me sort of, you know...
Spanish Prisoner I saw first. I made a concerted effort. I was like, this is going to be a smart movie. This is like going to be a dialogue is going to be different. It's going to be sharper and crisper. So I really liked that. I like the character in it, that the protagonist isn't sort of, it's like a caper, but he's not really like your typical hero. Even he's not a con man being conned. He's not a,
he's a normal copper. Guy.
He's like an economist.
He's smart though.
He's a really sharp economist, but he's on the ball about things. So I liked that. I think after seeing that one, the next one I may have saw might have been Glengarry Glen Ross. Ronan, I remember thinking was pretty good. I started like really getting like trying to be real aware of that, and it seemed like maybe.
Did you see it in the theater?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
With Mamet, I think you're. It seemed to me like looking at his body of work to a point, it's very sort of genre specific. It's about dudes that are old, they're kind of rough, they're gruff,
people who are good at what they do, whatever that may be, and he puts them in different genre situations.
But they're all
I'm surprised he hasn't done a Western.
but that's exactly right. It's like the modern stuff. Huh. I mean, it's noir, it's cops, and it's about deception and sort of how people get one over on one another. and schlubs and everything else. You know, I mean, that's Glengarry Glen Ross. That's Heist. That's Homicide seems to be a bit about that. House of Games, Spanish Prisoner. State in Maine is like sort of the break from that. It's like, it's like all of a sudden he decides to do sort of a cutesy romantic comedy almost. I mean, I don't know. We've talked about how whether or not the romance makes something a romantic comedy.
One thing I really like about his themes, it holds true in Heist, which I guess we'll get into in detail in a minute. But, you know, there's a lot of movies that have been coming out recently, namely No Country for Old Men, which is literally about the title.
Mm-hmm.
And Mamet kind of holds on to this different thing, which is you get older, and people assume that you get worse,
but you get
stay sharp. Yeah. And that's the great thing, is that they're all about this. The Edge is about that.
Yeah.
You know, Ronin is really about that still. Mm-hmm. Like that's what these movies are about. The movies where the tables are turned, which are Spanish Prisoner and House of Games, where the people who are the mark,
mm-hmm.
those are about people who are the mark, and that's the main person.
Yeah.
And they both find a way to turn the tables through, usually not, and that's the great thing, is that in Heist, you see the point of view of the people who are finding the mark and doing the con.
Yeah.
House of Games and Spanish Prisoner are both from the point of view of the person who is, honestly, they're smart in their own way. But
there's more of a mystery in those. Then.
Well, it's not just that. It's really, I mean, House of Games is really, it's like Heist. It's exactly like Heist, mm-hmm. except for this is the opposite point of view. It's really brilliant. It's shot differently. You can tell it's his first film. It's got a little bit of, like, directorial flaws, but it is flawless in terms of plotting and script and all that stuff. It's almost exactly like Heist, in a way. It's not anything like plot wise really, but it's from the other point of view. And the way these marks overcome it is not through the incredible savvy and intelligence that these that the Connors have.
Yeah.
It's through some other it's through something else that these people didn't account for.
It's dumb luck. Yeah.
And it's always something like,
so it kind of offers a counter proposal in those films to his initial proposal guys.
But at the same time, these are people who have been underestimated.
Mm-hmm.
It's always someone who's been underestimated who shows you, I've got what it takes to come out on top.
Exactly. And that's running in the unit like all the time. Yeah. It's always just like, they just don't know that these guys are the ultimate badasses, mm-hmm. you know, and they're not going to lose.
Right.
And someone underestimates them. Someone thinks so-and-so. Doesn't matter. These guys are kick-ass. And so we'll probably talk about that in a while or later. Another part of it is, I think one thing that I like about Mamet is that he's known as this writer, but... Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like he's given, like I said, the textbook fame.
One thing is, a playwright, if you're just a screenwriter,
yeah,
you're always just a screenwriter. If you're a playwright, you literally, that's where the auteur theory goes out the window. Yeah. In plays, it doesn't matter who directed the thing, because it's going to play in 10 years also, and it's going to have a different director.
Yeah.
What matters, only thing that matters in that case, is going to have different actors and stuff, is the playwright. That's the only thing that matters on Broadway and stuff like that. He got his fame first from Tony nominations. Glengarry Glen Ross was a hugely popular play. Speed the Plow was huge. He both won awards for those.
Mm-hmm.
They just killed Big Daddy. Big Daddy's dead.
America killed him. Yep. That's where they got the flag and the shots.
Exactly.
There.
White America.
Mm-hmm.
White America KKK. You know, I think where he got his success, first of all, was that. And then you give him the benefit of a doubt when he moves into film.
Mm-hmm.
And he hasn't disappointed.
But the thing about it is that so often it seems that, at least nowadays, all these characters that get popular, these literary figures and stuff,
mm-hmm.
they're always esoteric. I think that there was a lot of people coming in. Hi! And so there's some kind of like difficult aspect to them. I mean,
right.
What I like about Mamet is, I think what I kind of like about Hemingway, it's just straightforward.
It's totally straightforward.
It's like he knows his stuff and he can write a good script. Mm-hmm. He can write a good story, tell a beginning, a middle, and end. His structure's there, the narrative's there. I mean, you might say that's tired, but seems to be happening a lot with newer stuff. It's not some super meta, difficult, like bizarro thing. It's just a well-written story.
Right.
For what it is. And I think there's still value in that.
You know, people talk about style and substance. Usually there's a third thing they don't talk about, but they end up
they end up mentioning as well, and a lot of times has much importance, which is meaning. And he kind of, you know, it's not, there's style definitely in the dialogue, but it's so much substance in terms of plotting and stuff. Mm-hmm. The themes usually don't matter that much. They do matter. There's a theme that's in there.
The themes are there, though.
But it's totally there, but it's like you said, it's so straightforward that it's not something you have to dig out and, like, analyze, really. It's what it comes down to is the substance and the structure shows you the theme, it shows you the style, it shows you everything you need to know. There's nothing that's hidden from you.
You can kind of, like, completely accept it if someone says they don't like Mammoth. Mm-hmm. Because it's like, okay, you just don't like that style. You know, like, I like the style. And so, I think you can like those kinds of films, you know, that have the same structure and are telling the same kind of story. Like, what were we talking about? The Italian Job. It's another heist film.
Yeah.
But I don't like it like I like Heist.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's just talk about Heist.
Let's just talk about Heist.
We talked about Heist.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we're going to do. Things I didn't like about it, I guess. Okay, let's see. That's right. I remembered, like, in the theater thinking, well, how did they get the gold out? But then, like, you know, I did that whole, they get back to it. And they realized that they didn't actually get it out. They just... So I'm always doing that in these heist movies. I'm always trying to figure out the improbable parts. And I think the conclusion of this movie... I'm pretty well satisfied with, except for the end. The gunfight at the end is so haphazard, and it's like they didn't really plan on it. They kind of lucked out, you know? They both get shot.
They did. I think they did luck out.
And, I mean, it's like that part wasn't covered, but then the other double cross that follows it is? I mean, spoiler alert, guys. We're talking about films that have been out for kind of a while, and I think that for our podcast... We can just talk about the films. We can just analyze them. I don't really feel like I don't want to sit there and spend 20 minutes just rehashing a plot for someone. Mm-hmm. Because then it's either entertaining if they haven't seen the movie. It's like, oh, I don't have to see the movie now. Well,
I mean, you can analyze as you go.
You kind of can, but it's more fun. Like, I'd just rather analyze it. Pick the stuff you want to analyze.
Well, for the Masters series, we have to do plot.
Yeah, because it's usually pretty relevant. Yeah. But, I mean, in the case of, like, There Will Be Blood, I don't think we even talked about the plot. We just started talking about the things that meant something, as far as we could tell, and what we got out of them. And so, like, our podcasts are definitely the sort of thing that you have to see the movie in order to understand them.
Mm-hmm. It's not that big a deal, I think. You know, if somebody's listening to this thing, the odds are they've seen it, and if they haven't, maybe they'll want to, because we paint such a beautiful picture.
They'll be confused, and they won't just be angry.
We paint such a beautiful picture, Ian, and me. My favorite thing about Heist is that it's really tight.
Yeah,
and,
true.
You mentioned during the movie there's these things they do in con movies and in crime movies, heist movies, of which there are quite a few.
Inside Man, which is when a lot of people like. I didn't like that.
It was okay. I've never been a big. I thought it was good for a Spike Lee movie. I don't like Spike Lee stuff.
I forgot that he even did it until a certain point. But then, like, the Nazi angle on it just seemed like it was so tired, like I was hoping it would be something different.
I was interested about that. I thought that was interesting, because the Nazi thing is something I think that hasn't come up in a while.
Are you kidding me?
You have to come back to it eventually.
As soon as he said it's something I don't think we want to talk about, is it going to be Nazis or is it going to be something different that's more interesting?
Either Nazis or something about hidden homosexuality, usually. So, I think that... It just runs tight, and there's the moments when they're setting things up. It doesn't take too long on them. The score, which I recently watched with Blaine, has constant moments of setting things up and people meticulously, you know, and it's kind of like the No Country for Old Men thing. It's different when it's not a movie about that. When it's a movie about that, you're like, well, now they're going to set some stuff up, and they do it. And you know it's just going to all, it all goes to serving the big finish.
Yep.
In No Country for Old Men, it wasn't that. It was to show things about character and how they were hiding things and the way they did things.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Josh Brolin's character in that, despite being kind of, you know, it showed that this wasn't just some rash decision when he took this money. Like, he knew when he did it that he was going to have to live, like, the rest of his life a certain way.
Yeah.
And he was very careful with everything. The rest of the time in the movie is that he was very careful until it mattered the most, I guess. But... And the way they do that in this movie is interesting, and he skips a lot of things that, while I was watching it this last time, I was thinking, you know, I would have liked to see a little more of how they set certain things up, for instance.
Yeah, I would have
too. They always had the right tools at the right time. They knew exactly, I think, one thing I think was really interesting is, so,
They get into the plane. They knock out the pilots.
Yeah.
They first of all, it shows the crates that they eventually hide the gold in.
Yeah.
And it stays on that for a second.
They're Chekhov's crates.
Exactly. Yeah. So it stays on that for a second. Then it goes to the Swiss crate.
Mm-hmm.
And they unload some stuff in the truck. So what I'm thinking is, he said they needed a month, right? So mm-hmm. I'm thinking he made that up as his own company, and he arranged for those empty crates to be on that plane so they could do that. Because how would they know that? He always had to have a backup plan, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think he arranged for it. And they don't explain that. I think it would have been interesting to at least hint at it. Because it's really kind of just insinuated that it it might be. And I don't know if that's just me or if it's more obvious to you that that's what it was. But as I was watching it this last time, I was thinking, I think that's the reason why they needed the month is because he set that thing up to do that.
But then he didn't.
And then that way he would have the proper. What's that?
Did he end up getting the month in the end from DeVito?
Yeah, he got it.
Okay, yeah.
And so then that's why he had all the proper paperwork. Because I was thinking, he gives it to the guy, and the guy's looking over the paperwork. And I was thinking, at that point, I was thinking, you know, the amount of time it would have taken them to just randomly grab the right paperwork and, like, steal it from somewhere. You know, like, there had to be a lot of other stealing involved because you can't just go buy things and say, hey,
it's sort of an abridged... It's kind of ironic because the film was called Heist.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe it's not ironic because the film's called Heist and it's about the heist. It's not about the elaborate, convoluted setups and mini-heists and mini...
Yeah.
Things that need to happen in order to pull it
off.
It's
about the one heist, and it involves, leading up to it, it's about, we gotta get this gold, gotta do the one more job. The one more job happens, and then after that, it's who's gonna end up with the gold. So it all revolves around the gold, has to do the heist. So it stays true to the theme.
Should have been called Quadruple Cross, or whatever the hell it ended up being. You didn't like that Ricky Jay got smoked?
No, I didn't, because like we were talking about, it's not that he's the comedic relief, which he's not so much comedic as he's the one who says the snappiest riot lines. Mamet's always had a soft spot for this guy. He met him when he started to make House, when he was making House of Games before the movie, because Ricky Jay was a magician and a card guy. That's what he was. So he hired him to do that in the film.
Cool.
And so he's like, all right, I'll do it. And he started acting from there. It's the fact that, not that they killed the comedic relief, but that they killed the most unimposing, least dangerous of the crew. The rest of them are all cooler, and the cooler guys all end up living, you know,
and getting to be able to hang. Yeah. And it's kind of like it's a needless death too. They've even done the thing with his niece where they establish like a little more pathos for him than they do for any other
character.
Do
that mostly to show why he would actually give up the information. The only reason he would give up the information is because they kidnap his niece at that point, and they show him that they have her.
Yeah,
because otherwise, there's this guy has obviously been shown to be so in tight with the rest of this group that he's not going to give anyone away.
Exactly.
And he knows they can't kill him if he doesn't give them the information. So
I'm still a little confused because DeVito keeps insisting that if what's his name? If Hackman hadn't double-crossed him, then everything would have been fine. They all would have made money.
Right.
But it seemed like he had his nephew set up to do the double-cross the whole time.
Exactly. Yeah. So he was... and the nephew might have been working alone. We don't
know.
It's
possible.
But the point is that he never wanted to do this thing in the first place for DeVito, and he kind of forced him into it. And it's the little retribution thing.
Yeah,
like, you know what? Guess what? I'm not going to take the whole thing.
Like, they established that it will go hunt you down, you know?
Yeah, right. Well, that's the thing. That's the thing is that, I mean, I don't think that DeVito's group is kind of small.
Yeah.
I don't think they're well enough off to hunt him down. If he gets out of the country on a boat, you're not going to find him. He's going to go to some remote island. You're not going to find him.
I think part of the problem that I have with this movie is it sort of has that feeling of occurring in its own world, but not in a good way, like in a kind of unbelievable way, where like there's the airport, there's like four sets. There's DeVito's place, there's the airport, there's the dock. I mean, I guess there's sort of two docks. Mm-hmm. There's where Hackman's hangout is.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, it's sort of
it's
like
a play.
It's
man.
Like a it's
I mean,
like
everything
some,
he
yeah,
is a
exactly.
Play.
It's like
everything
it's like suburban, in hardly any outside characters at all, like in the movie. And the fact that Hackman is burned at the very beginning of that monitor season,
which is great. I mean, every time I watch that, it gets better that he gets burned right at the beginning.
But then it never really means anything because
it gives him the whole motivation
and stuff. No, it gives him that, but what they needed to do is, and it would have been tried and tired, but it feels like some time's gone by between now and then.
Mm-hmm.
But it needed to be like 18 months. They needed to convey somehow that there had been a little bit more time, or that he was away from it physically. You know, like if he got burned in North Carolina and now he was in, like, it looks like he's somewhere in, like, New England, maybe.
They're in Vermont, I think.
Yeah, yeah. It's Vermont. That sounds right.
You see multiple Mike Lessons places that say Vermont. Yeah. So.
That, and then just that sort of, like you said, it's like a play, so it's very little in terms of characters, are outside characters. It doesn't feel like it's a world that's lived in a lot of respects. It seems like most of the time there's no one around.
Well, I mean, and it holds true to his stuff, and honestly to most stuff. Like, unless you're watching something like a National Lampoon's movie or something like that, where there has to be hundreds of extras running around the street naked or something like that.
Well, like Blues Brothers party things like that, because like they're
and it was also one of the most expensive films ever to make, and I bet they wish they hadn't spent so much on it, because
Mr. T was one of those extras.
Yeah, it's a cult classic, you know, and it really is a great movie just because of the absurd amount of car crashes, which is funny because that's not that type of movie. You know?
Yeah.
I kind of agree with you of the point there, but I think that
I just remember the first time I watched it, I was like, good acting, it's like a good solid sort of story. But for some reason, it left me wanting something else. And I don't know if it was just... It's shot outside, but but because, like I said, it has a feeling of a play, that's probably the problem. It's like the landscape, physically, is bigger than the story, which is sort of a smaller like interaction.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That said, I mean, it's a good movie. Like, I wanted to see it again.
Yeah.
So Heist is a good movie. If you haven't seen it, I don't know if we really... We haven't really spoiled it, I think. There's double crosses and people getting shot and stuff,
quadruple crosses.
But it doesn't really amount to like ruining the movie for the purposes of enjoying it and watching it. Mm-hmm. You know, he's also been responsible for other such fantastic script doctorings as that to Hobgoblins, but mainly for the club scum scene with Road Rash.
Pre-med abilities in the bathroom right now. Pre-med stuff. He knows about anatomy, I'll tell you that much. Knows his way around a body. If you know what I mean.